Okay, thank you very much for this opportunity to be in this very nice place with many people interested in this subject of strongly correlated many-body system. So this work is an attempt to describe spin-liquid phases in two-dimensional, essentially quantum antiferromagnet, by means of a numerical approach, which is based on a variational description. So this work is in collaboration mainly with Seiji Yunoki, which is postdoc in CISA, and many other people that were more or less around CISA a few years ago from here, and also Luca Capriotti that is here now. So this is the plan of the talk. If I have time, is I want to deal with two subjects. First of all, we want to try to convince you that we can define a variational wave function, which is reasonable in the sense that satisfy well-known constraint of strongly correlated system. One of the most important is the so-called Lipschitz-Matthes theorem. And in dealing this, we will see that there is no Hamiltonian in this first part. So you have not to be surprised that you don't find any Hamiltonian. In the second part, I will try, having passed this check, I will try to convince you that there is a nice possibility to have spin-liquid phases in the triangular lattice. We know that in quantum dimer model, this is not a possibility, but it's actually true. And in this triangular model, with a little modification of triangular Heisenberg quantum system, we will see that we have not only one spin liquid, but we have realized two kinds of spin liquids that are quite funny. Well, before let me try to explain what is the philosophy of the approach. So for several, most of us have tried to struggle with several years for solving a given Hamiltonian. And the problem in one dimension, a lot of work has been done and it's very successful, but in two dimensions, there are very few access solutions. So the question is whether this is of course, this when one finds an excess solution, one is happy and understand more or less everything. But the point is that also in this case, when we solve a two-dimensional model, we have to be worried, because if this model is unstable for perturbation, for small perturbation, we have done a lot of effort, but we really don't know we are solving a physical model. There is another approach which is more or less not so solid like solving exact Hamiltonian. It just start from the variational approach. So I don't know, given a model, what is the ground state, but I know that should be a wave function somehow. So let's start to define a wave function and see whether this is a good description of a possible ground state of a physical Hamiltonian. And the point is that we don't want to solve all Hamiltonian, because if you take an Hamiltonian at random, it is very likely to be unstable. But we want to solve some Hamiltonian which is stable. So that describe that given some short range description of the physical process, describe physical phases. So this is the approach. Everybody knows that, for instance, a Slater determinant is the ground state of the so-called Hartree-Fock Hamiltonian. And within Hartree-Fock, we understand most of solid-state physics. Similar example for the superconductivity, which is basically given by the BCS wave function. And so somehow, the hope is that historically, there is a reason to believe that there is a good overlap between going back from variational to reasonable ground state solution of Hamiltonian, of physical Hamiltonian. So the main point is that how to define reason. This is not really a subjective type of thing. So somehow, when we know an Hamiltonian, what we have to try to convince you that there is a most important property is that you should have the size consistency. Suppose that I have an Hamiltonian that is defined on very different region of space, and somehow I drop any interaction between the two Hamiltonian, so they are decoupled. We know that the wave function in this limit has to be exactly factorized. This is a main property of wave function, of many body wave function. So somehow we can argue, actually, in the variational approach, anybody that wants to write a wave function usually writes an exponential of something, and that's the basic reason, because we want to verify the size consistency, the extensivity of the many body wave function. So the if we rely on this, it is quite reasonable that this operator that appear here and is applied to the vacuum, to the electron vacuum, can be expanded in the usual many body operators C dag C, if I want to write a reasonable wave function for a spin 1/2 model. So the, you can easily realize that due to the normal ordering, if you want, the C dag C does not appear, and you can always write the first term, which is somehow a Gaussian part of the wave function. So this is a naive derivation of what we should expect for a reasonable wave function. So if we want to have a singlet, and we want to describe an Hamiltonian which is done by spin 1/2 object, in order to have a singlet, the only requirement that you have to do in this pairing function is that it has to be symmetric. So if it is symmetric, essentially the exponential that appear here is a singlet. So if I apply something to the vacuum, it remains a singlet, because the vacuum is also a singlet. And so this is legit wave function, legitimate wave function. The only thing that if we want to describe a spin system, we have to have a spin for each site, so we cannot have, this may create several, at least two spins with opposite spin, and so you have to put some projector. But you see that also the Gutzwiller projector is a size extensive operator, because it is, if you double the size, this is essentially acts on the double the system. So this is also a legitimate operator, and so quite naturally we see that we cannot do much different than that. Of course, working with this wave function, which was introduced by Anderson at the beginning of ITC, one has to the numerical facts are that this wave function is extremely accurate. So there should be some deep reason why we can stop up to the Gaussian term for describing a spin system. Probably there is some renormalization group or whatever, but as a matter of fact, this is very accurate in low dimension and system. For instance, with the same expression, it's not occasional that you can get the exact solution of one-dimensional model. For instance, well, probably the most simple way to understand the Majumdar-Ghosh case, this Fij is just in one dimension, is just one and nearest neighbors, and you get the exact solution of the Majumdar-Ghosh. So this is, and this shows that the size extensive means that this F has to be of the order of one when I am close, and has to decay at large distance. So this is, the other injustice is a little more complicated, but fall in the same class. So let us assume that the Gauss state of a reasonable Hamiltonian is described by this wave function, and let's see what are the consequences. So the first thing, one constraint that we have to satisfy is this so-called Lipschitz-Matisse theorem. that I don't know if I have to remind you, is that essentially is obtained by a very fancy operator that basically means that you are applying a twist that is very slow in the spin configuration. In directed, you take a box, Lx times Ly, and with Ly odd, so Lx you have to imagine is a long strip in one direction, and you apply a phase rotation essentially around the z-axis of the spin, but it's very slowing twisting. What you can see, you can imagine that since the rotation is very low on a large scale of my system, this does not change. So, principle, if I compute correlation function, this does not change. But due to this spin 1 alpha, if we are at a spin 1 alpha system, this kind of operator is able to change the momentum. So, it's not doing anything, it just take a wave function, for instance, with zero momentum, it changes the momentum with pi. This is written in several places, but it's very simple to derive by the property of this operator. And so, the consequence is that, suppose that this psi is a ground state of some Hamiltonian, then I can create an excited state with zero energy because I can do the strips very long and with arbitrary odd number of chains, and I get another state which has the same energy. So this is a very strong result in one-dimensional system that has a very strong consequence. And of course is relevant also in two-dimensional because, for instance, you can always get the bulk limit of any model by doing some strange finite size scaling. So I don't see any, it's very powerful. And so by the Lipschitz-Matisse theorem, what we have, for instance, that the consequences are that either if these two states are figure a state, they can be connected by physical operator. The most important, for instance, is the well-known dimer operator. They take these states as momentum pi zero. You take this strip, you know that this c prime differ pi pi from psi, so you can put an operator that has momentum pi zero, and you can have a non-vanishing expectation value. And when this occurs, you have broken translational symmetry. The ground state is at least twofold degenerate, and we have the so-called dimerized state. Either there are gapless excitation, for instance, in the one-dimensional beta lattice, you have the spinons, that with two spinons we can have a gapless excitation just at momentum pi, as predicted by the Lipschitz-Matisse theory, or the other more interesting possibilities that these two states are really degenerate, but are not connected by no physical operator. This is what we really hope it happens if we want some exotic space, and is called the topological degeneracy, which at the beginning of the story of the Lipschitz-Matisse theorem was given as a possibility, but one may believe that this is very unlikely. Why should I have that I solve an Hamiltonian, I find a two degenerate state, and this is not a physical excitation. So this is quite interesting. So let's take a variation, a wave function that has a full cap. So if we take the Fourier transform, let me see also the other part. So somehow you define this variation wave function, how to define this Fij, the Pyrin function. So you take your BCS Hamiltonian and you put an explicit gap in the system that you can do in your system with periodic boundary condition in both the direction. And so what happens, if you put a complex gap function, you get clearly a gap in this BCS Hamiltonian. That is not the ground state of a spin model. It will be probably after projection. And so what happens is that the excitation of this Hamiltonian have always the gap, because you can never vanish three functions if you want. This is a basic property, how to get a gap in two dimensions. You have to vanish, in order to vanish the excitation spectrum, you have to vanish epsilon k, but the imaginary part and the real part of delta k, and you can never do. So this is gapped function. If you compute the Fourier transform, I mean the Gauss state of the BCS Hamiltonian can be written with this pairing function, but this is smooth because this is the denominator is always gapped, and so you have a finite somehow current length in this system. So the question that you ask, if I do the projection of this wave function on a singly occupied sites, and I take this very long system, large system, how can I satisfy the Lipschitz matrix? Everything is gapped. There is nothing, this is translational invariant. How can satisfy the Lipschitz matrix? And the answer is that, just because this is a reasonable wave function, you put just your projection, you take your system where the Lipschitz matrix should be satisfied, and you compute the Dimer-Dimer correlation function. You see a nice oscillation along the direction of the long system. This is a simulation of very big rectangulars. They are odd number of chains. And you see that clearly you show dimerization. So that one of the predictions of the Lipschitz matrix is correct, even though we have not done anything to the wave function to satisfy that. So this is just an outcome, if you want, that that suggests that in one dimension, since we can solve most of the model in one dimension, and most of the model with SU2, probably all, there is no invariance, a task translation invariant, when they have a gap, show dimerization, this simple approach show that it is obvious, somehow, the restriction of the, in one dimension of the dimer covering easily produce dimerization. Just by somehow the fact that the entropy is very small for dimer. So for instance, in one dimension, you cannot put only two different short range dimer configuration because I don't have the choke. Why is going to happen? For instance, take the Majumdar-Ghosh wave function, e to the Fij Sidaga Sidaga, and they try to project. What happens is that this is translational invariant. But then if you want to project on a single occupied site, this creates a singlet at Ij, and this is non-zero only at Ij. So if you want to project, you have only two possibilities. These two dimerized configuration. So it's obvious that even though this is translational invariant, when you project, you have only two possibilities. You get spontaneous dimerization. And this is the reason why also in the reason why happens also in three chain and all odd chain is somehow a consequence of the Lipschitz matrix. And in fact, well, this is a conclusion that I try to push. But if you do a finite size scaling, so you want to reach to the two-dimensional C limit, what happens is that this other parameter decreases. This is done as a function of the dimension in the x direction. You do the finite size scaling for all of the chains, and you see that dramatically it goes down as a function of the system size. You can show how dramatically goes down this other parameter. So this other parameter connects the two states, I remind you, that are predicted to be gapless by the Lipschitz matrix theorem. You see that it's not critical. It goes with a very short correlation length of the order of two, so that's why we can do the calculation somehow, otherwise. Yes?
This does have this state for external reversal symmetry.
That's true. That's, I won't arrive to the next slide. No, if you have.
I was wondering how this, I mean, the quantum diamond doesn't give you that.
No, that's true. Well, that's this is the comparison. This is a good point because there is another fact that I don't know. Probably everybody knows that has inspired us that there should be always. It is difficult to open a gap in two dimensions without breaking translation. Is the solution of the quantum dimer model in the square lattice. You get that there is no dimerization, but it's critical. So there is not a definite correlation length. So the system has no gap. Huh? And in fact, if you do this short range RVB on a square lattice, you don't get this nice feature of a finite correlation length. Huh? But if you have this finite correlation length, of course, this means that the topological degeneracy has been realized. Why has been realized? Because this operator for the square lattice, okay, defines two degenerate states, but there is no overlap in any physical for any physical operator within these two states in the torus.
The wave function that you're writing down, that has valence bonds connecting the same sublattice as well, right? It's not a bipartite wave function.
It's not a bipartite wave function. Yes, that's an important point because otherwise we will not probably have got this result. Though the point is that how to answer your question. This is, how to understand this is a non-trivial two-dimensional spin liquid wave function because it breaks time reversal. Time reversal is somehow. Actually, it's chiral in the sense you see this. This is the imaginary part of the gap function. If you change kx in minus kx, this change sign, and this is not changing sign, so it's a spatial reflection. Or if you want, if you change kx with ky, so you do a reflection along the diagonal, this chiral operator change sign. But it changes sign even if you do the so-called time reversal transformation, which is essentially change the sign to all the spin. So the chiral state is just the one that has this other parameter. And that breaks time reversal and parity, but not the composition of the two. And in fact, due to the fact that we have put this gap to this maximum value, we can see this kind of other parameter. We have computed the chiral-chiral correlation in the infinite, essentially, odd chain legs. And we see that when we go to the two-dimensional limit, this chiral correlation is very it's clearly finite, but nevertheless it's very small, so it's very difficult if you have a realistic gap, like maybe in the J1, J2 there is a very small gap, you can hardly see a very, even if it is chiral and there is broken time reversal, there is very few possibilities to see this other parameter. Because it's somehow the reasonable gap is 1/10 of this, which means that probably the chiral will be 100 times the chiral of the parameter that you can see numerically. It's 100 times smaller because you measure the square of the other parameter on a finite system. So why it is important to have chirality to open a gap? Because if I put a real gap function, what happens as usual, if you restrict my BCS wave function to be real, what happens is that in two dimensions, this is the locus of point when epsilon k, so the bare kinetic energy vanishes, and if you put, you have to vanish a real function, somehow this will vanish in another surface, and typically they intersect in some nodal points. So for instance, if you don't put delta xy, you have the usual hot points at pi alpha, plus or minus pi half. But if you put even a real, if you add this term, you don't remove these nodal points, and you cannot open a gap. So this is a way to open a gap. And this is probably the most likely if you don't want to break translational invariance. But
you can use just the S wave gap function, which is completely real and has a gap.
Yes, but as a matter of fact, this is not very good variationally. Yeah? I mean, I've tried. I mean, I want. Well, my point is that suppose that you are close to an anti-ferromagnet, and we know that this gap x square minus epsilon square is very good, variational. And now you want to modify, you want to describe a magnetic transition from a magnetic state to a non-magnetic state, you have to open a gap somehow. And a slight modification of this picture is, if you want to open a gap, is just you have to put the complex or the parameter. It's very difficult unless you break some symmetry. But we will see that in the triangular lattice, there is another way. Yeah? That's interesting that I want to arrive to the second part. So this is the conclusion of the first part, if there is some objection of this, that there are reasonable wave functions that are described with this BCS wave function that can describe some phase, spin liquid phase, because they have a full gap, they are not critical, and they don't have broken translation symmetry breaking. So now we are ready to go to a realistic model. So if somehow the spirit of the, we define some reasonable wave function, we can verify that satisfy all known reasonable result, or all known exact result, and are dimerized in low dimensional system, and we try to study a realistic model. So this is, in order to see something that as a spin liquid we have seen by the work of Meissner, Sondi, that we have the possibility to have a spin liquid in a triangular lattice which is very clear with a very short correlation length. Because the problem, if we find a spin liquid and the correlation length is very large, numerically is very difficult, that we don't have a clue. This does not mean, I don't want to say that it is not possible to find a spin liquid in a square, but that is more easy certainly in triangular. Why it's more easy? Because there are numerical calculation. Well, somehow in one of the nicest calculation was done by Niswich, which was also here, and this is the, you put your triangular antiferromagnet and you put now famous ring exchange term, and you calculate the spin gap. And you find which something very, very peculiar that, well, although we have a limitation of the finite size, that the gap may be of the order of J, which is amazingly large for a spin liquid. And therefore you can see that, well, you have to look only to the square, which are the reasonable cluster. The other one are some frustration, so this is, they want to convince more, but. And then there is experimentally, also, there are coming recently very important possibility of having a spin liquid. Especially I want to remind the Colder experiment of cesium copper compound. This is a very nice material. Because it's very clean, we can, if we can do some model, it's just an Heisenberg antiferromagnet on a triangular lattice, because the copper resides in this tetrahedron, and is a spin 1/2, so it's a perfect spin 1/2 system. They are almost uncoupled because of the presence of the cesium atom, essentially, forbid any interaction between the planes, and are on a perfect triangular lattice, with the only exception that there is a coupling between the chains, which is larger than the intra-chain coupling. And the experimentalists are convinced, at least recently are convinced, that this is a spin liquid even at zero field, because essentially you find some kind of order if you do at very low temperature, but is order of magnitude smaller than the coupling of the two-dimensional coupling. Somehow everybody knows that in two dimension there is no long-range order, But if you allow a very weak coupling, this Mermin-Wagner theorem should not play much role. So if the system has two-dimensional order, you would expect, at least this is the experimental expectation, that should be not very much smaller than the two-dimensional coupling. Another interesting realization of the spin liquid of the triangular lattice is in the inorganic compounds, in which this is very difficult, but essentially these are these organic molecules, very large molecule, they form a strong dimerized state in which all the molecular orbital is occupied only by one electron. And that also is a spin one half system if you try to place this molecular orbital in the center of this dimerized. So each of these couple of molecules represent one side of our triangular lattice. And there are two realizations of this triangular lattice. With the one, essentially, they differ essentially by the value of this interchain coupling. So it's the same model, essentially, studied with different coupling. And what the experimentalists found using NMR is that when they decrease in the fifth material with very large J prime, you see that when you go below 25 Kelvin, you get a clear splitting of the NMR response. What is going on? The system want to have two-dimensional magnetic order, and so the measurement, the NMR measurement, which fills the spin of the hydrogen nuclei, is filling also this extra magnetic field. So it splits this peak, the single peak. And instead, in the other material, which has smaller J prime, you don't see anything up to 32 millikelvin. This is really surprising, considering that the J is 250 kelvin. You can imagine such, how to explain this without having a spin liquid. I don't know. Anyway, this is a very sharp experiment. So what is the model that we have to study to have some contact with the experiment? Is this kind of model. And what we are going to argue, well, let's say some case in which we can solve this model without doing any calculation. So this, if I put J prime equals zero, I have uncoupled chains. And so we know that this is a beta, it's a spin liquid because there is no magnetic order, and has gapless excitation. The spinons, spin one half, everybody knows this one-dimensional physics. If we do J prime going to infinity, well, we have to work with fantasy, but essentially what happens is that you go back to the square lattice, because you can neglect this coupling, and this is the perfect square lattice. So you go to something that is believed to have antiferromagnetic log range order. But what's going on in between is rather fancy, according to our variational approach. And in order to explain how we get this result, I have to introduce to the methodology that we use to study this model. So we use this variational wave function, of course, but we use not only a simple variational approach, but what is called the fixed node approach, essentially, generalized recently on a lattice. And the basic idea of this fixed node is very simple. You have your quantum Hamiltonian in a continuum, which is a Laplacian that gives you the non-trivial quantum mechanical part, and the potential term, the interaction between electrons. So then you take any guess of the solution of this Hamiltonian, of the ground state of this Hamiltonian, and instead of you do the inverse problem, you build an Hamiltonian for which this guessed wave function is the exact ground state. This is similar to what is done in the quantum dimer model, no? You take the Rorschach-Iverson model. Well, I know how to write down a wave function, and I try to guess what is the Hamiltonian that solves exactly this model. So as you see in this example, if you try to do this, you may build up an Hamiltonian which is unstable. because you do a small perturbation in this Hamiltonian, you will get a different physics. So this is there is a better way to correct this approach, is to add back the potential that we have added. So if you want to get that Cg is the exact ground state, you have to add this potential to the true physical potential. But then I can go to an effective Hamiltonian, which is much better. I just subtract back what I have added just to solve, to give an Hamiltonian. And well, of course, this kind of game seems crazy, because at the end you get the exact result. The only problem is that when you have done the first step, you realize that you cannot, this potential is infinite when the wave function vanishes. So essentially, this effective Hamiltonian is defined only in the so-called nodal pocket, where the wave function does not change sign. But somehow it's closer, this Hamiltonian, to the original guessed Hamiltonian. It's closer somehow to the Hamiltonian. One can show that at least if you solve the ground state of this Hamiltonian, you get a better energy of your guess. And a lattice, you need a more complicated formulation, but essentially you can do the same. So what you do, and you have a main basic advantage. Somehow, in a lattice, if you have a configuration and a closer configuration, you don't have necessarily a configuration for which the wave function vanishes. So the zero of the wave function does not exist, basically, apart from measure zero. So somehow the potential, this if you want, this barrier that you add to the effective Hamiltonian is not so terrible on a lattice. You have some kind of lattice regularization of the fixed node Hamiltonian. And you can do the same, essentially. You have to add back your potential, your guessed wave function that solve the problem, but you have somehow a class of Hamiltonian for which you can do the simulation, for which you can ask what's going on to the ground state of this Hamiltonian. This Hamiltonian contains somehow the quantum mechanics, because it retains most of the off-diagonal matrix elements of the original one. If you have a very good wave function, somehow all the frustrated matrix element, the one that would increase the energy if you take it, are not present. For instance, if you try to solve the Heisenberg model on a square lattice, you never meet these matrix elements if the wave function has the Marshall sign, and you solve the problem. So basically, all the problem for which we don't have sign problem are exact within this formulation.
Do you mean that this is the exact wave function? Is Hamiltonian for which that's the exact ground state?
If you don't have sign problem, with Monte Carlo, you take this Hamiltonian and you find the ground state, the exact ground state of this wave function, of this Hamiltonian, okay? Yes, you can do. This is. And this is an approximate Hamiltonian, if you want. It's not the exact one, where you but is very close. In which sense? In which sense is very close? Actually, the inverse problem somehow has many solutions. Given a state, I can give the class several Hamiltonian that. The point is that due to the variational property, if your variational wave function is very good or exact, the ground state, not the energy, of this Hamiltonian, of this class of the Hamiltonian, will be always the same. And so you don't change your physics if you change gamma. And obviously you get the exact result for gamma equal 1. You see that for gamma equal 1, the Hamiltonian that you are sampling is exactly the same. So somehow it's a class of Hamiltonian that are supposed to be close to the exact one, as long as your variational guess of the nodes. You see that all the matrix elements of that you are getting depends on how good are your nodes, are the sign of your wave function.
It's very
Yes, that's an important point. The locality of the off-diagonal matrix elements is always retained, no? Because the physics, for instance, if you have an Heisenberg model, you have a spin flip, and you can have nearest neighbor, second nearest neighbor, and these matrix elements are retained, no? Of course, I change their sign. The only thing is that can wonder about, and this is the important term, the spin flip term, which is a potential somehow that you add to the Hamiltonian, that is essentially trying to say to the wave function that has to change sign. Because if a wave function has to change sign, you have to have very low probability when you are close to a value of the wave function when you change sign. Okay? And that is obtained because this potential is very large when you go close to the sign change of the wave function. Okay? Why this potential is local? Because, of course, not for all the wave function, this potential will be reasonable. That's why I've done the first introduction. You can easily convince yourself that this wave function is localized, so has a finite correlation length. This is a potential that is... So somehow, suppose that one of the electron meets the barrier. The point is that this has not to affect the electrons that are far from this barrier. And this is realized because in this potential only the ratio of the matrix element appears. And this means that this quantity depends only on the local structure of the wave function, if the wave function is reasonable. Okay, this is maybe... anyway, let me again stress what is the philosophy of the approach. I cannot solve exactly H, but I can solve exactly H under some perturbation, which avoid me to design problem, if you want. The point is that to try to convince you that if I find a reasonable phase, so I'm able to find a reasonable starting point of the variational wave function, the modified Hamiltonian will not be much different from the original one, and its ground state property will be very close to it. In practice, anyway, I can get the ground state of some Hamiltonian, and my point is that if I want to do a model, the model has not to be very sensible to perturbation. So let me say what are the advantages of this and the drawbacks of this approach. You can systematically check the stability of the state. So you have your variational state, you apply that you are guessing that is the ground state of your Hamiltonian, you can apply the fixed node. If something change, you can suspect that this is not good. If it remains stable, so since you have done a very big path, you can expect that this phase, this physical state is close to the exact solution of your Hamiltonian, because if your Hamiltonian is a physical Hamiltonian, it has to be stable under perturbation, at least if you are away from a critical point. You can check the stability of an Hamiltonian. For instance, you take your Hamiltonian where there is no sign problem, then you ask what happens if I change the sign from Marshall sign to more fancy sign, and this is a perturbation of your original Hamiltonian, and you can check whether your physical expectation value will change. For instance, under non bipartite perturbation of the Hamiltonian. And the big advantage is that, I have not said, since it's called fixed node, the nodes may be non-trivial. They cannot be, because up to now, all the Hamiltonian that can be solved exactly either the Marshall sign or the boson sign, with only few exceptions. So this is instead a way we know a class of wave function at a very good sign, at least if you compare your calculation on a finite lattice, you can see that this kind of wave function has a beautiful average sign. So you can, the question is asking, what happens if I enlarge the system in a size consistent way, and I try to understand what are the physical properties. The drawback is that since this approach is done in configuration space, it is difficult to conserve the spin. So this Hamiltonian does not commute with the total spin, and so you can have difficulty to understand, for instance, quantum critical point of SU2 invariant model, because either you get easing, either you get easy axis. So I will not recommend this method to analyze quantum critical point. But and also, you don't have a very nice scaling. You have to compute determinants, and so you cannot do much larger size. But the most important point is that you cannot be written this in one line of PRL. It's very complicated somehow, but this is... So let us assume that... let's just try to do the variational calculation on this nice model. So this is the triangular lattice with different J. I remind you that this is stronger than this. And so what we did is parameterized the delta, the pairing function of the BCS wave function. We can optimize the energy. We get as close as possible to the solution of the model. We do our best. And the point is that what is important, that if you consider the one-dimensional limit, this kind of pairing, somehow this BCS pairing, so the third neighbor and the first neighbor are very important. So that's why these are very large. If you use these two only variational parameters, you get that the Bethe solution is essentially found. You get four digits of accuracy in the energy per psi. So it's amazingly accurate for the Bethe lattice. For the Bethe, not lattice, for the Heisenberg model in one dimension. You see that there are also interactions between the chains when you do your variational optimization, which are two-dimensional. So the chains interact. So this is not trivially uncoupled because to frustration. There is also some kind of uncoupling term is obtained because the T prime, so the in the BCS Hamiltonian, this variational parameter goes to zero, if you find the best energy, but the delta remains to couple the chains. So this is the... And the important parameter is that as soon as you have J prime different from zero, immediately you have that the chemical potential of your BCS Hamiltonian is different from zero. So how to understand this two-dimensional spin liquid ground state. Essentially, you have a quasi one-dimensional Fermi surface, which is T prime is zero, so is but you have a chemical potential non different from zero. So this line of zero of the energy are a little shifted by from pi r from the commensurate point. But then the gap function, which is highly non-trivial, is another surface that obviously in two dimensions have to meet the other one. So the excitation of this BCS Hamiltonian are gapless. You can vanish both this and this. So this is a strange kind of realization of a gapless spin liquid in two-dimensional system. We have started from the Bethe, which is gapless as spinons. Similar expression you can get, but this is obvious because we are in one dimension. In two dimensions, we remain the same. It is amazing that, for instance, if we do the same experiment on a finite number of odd legs, what happens? That, so one expects that this is strange. What happens is that the resolution in momentum in the y direction is discrete. So you possibly don't meet this line. They don't intersect, so you have a gap in the BCS spectrum, and so you dimerize. And that actually, if you go to the, if you see this If you do only two chains, this is exactly equivalent to the, you can easily understand this is exactly, this is J2 in the one-dimensional model, and this is J1, and this is not two-dimerized. So this wave function, though it's gapless only in one dimension, can reproduce the known result. It's not, and only because we are in two dimension, we can meet gapless points in the Fermi surface. So this is, in order to show the stability of this spin liquid state, what we do is this fixed node approach. And amazingly enough, nothing changed. This is quite trivial. You do the spin-spin correlation function in the x and in the y direction, nothing changed. Well, that's another thing that we can do with Monte Carlo is to compute the spin excitation and compare with the neutron scattering experiments. This is the spin excitation evaluated with this effective Hamiltonian, which we believe is a very good approximation of this model. And what happens is that without any parameter fit, you can reproduce a highly non-trivial lowest excitation spectrum of this Coldea lattice. This is highly non-trivial because if it were only one dimension, this would be exactly symmetric, and this is not the case, so this is reproduced. Of course, the problem is that even experimentally, that numerically, we cannot establish whether this is gapless or not. We can imagine that this is gapless only because we have the variational descriptors, the previous one, which is this, but we cannot prove that it remains gapless. So we believe that the only thing that we have is that this kind of gapless spin liquid state, when you try to do perturb it, somehow you do what you can with the amplitude of the wave function, nothing changes. So you are, if you have the XR solution, you can do something also to the sign of the wave function. You have done half the way to the XR solution somehow, and nothing changed. So this should be a reasonable test of the stability. So what happens instead when you go to the triangular? You would ask whether this is trivial, this method, nothing, never change anything. But we have another limit in which we have to change. We have used the same wave function, but we have to change the symmetry. So somehow to have a reasonable variational wave function, we struggled a lot of time in the triangular lattice, but at the end we got the idea to follow the standard approach for the quantum dimer model in the triangular lattice. What happens is that, and this is a nice way to open a gap in two dimension, somehow with an either broken translational symmetry. So you realize that the projected BCS wave function are very similar in construction with this RVB wave function, and the similarity is that we can build a short-range RVB by playing with the BCS gap function. And what we have to do in the triangular lattice is have break the translational symmetry of the gap function. And this is, for people that knows quantum dimer model, this is exactly what we have to do in the triangular lattice for solving this quantum dimer model. But the point is that you have to use a 2x1 unit cell with alternating sign, and but this, amazingly, does not break translational invariance. You can show that after projection, this was pointed out by Wen, many of the symmetry that you break of the BCS wave function can be recovered by gauge transformation. In this case, what I can do, if I translate my system by one lattice space here, I somehow superpose the positive bond with the negative bond. So I change the sign of the wave function. But this change of sign of the bonds can be recovered by a gauge transformation. This is nothing in the spin system. You just change the sign to all the bonds that are connecting different legs, different rows. So So this is a very important property. In the BCS Hamiltonian, it is like we have broken the symmetry, but in the projected state, this is a spin liquid. So this is, in order to be more precise, what we are doing is to define a BCS Hamiltonian with broken translation invariant in the BCS wave function. If you do very large chemical potential, you recover the, with this approach, the short range RVB on the triangular lattice. But of course, if you allow the variational parameter to optimize themselves, you can get better energy. And this is the result of the energy, of the variational energy. What is amazing of this result, that it compares well, we have a spin liquid wave function in the triangular lattice with no broken translational symmetry. If you take the short range RVB, this is very good for small sites, but goes up to the hill, and this suggests you that something is going to happen. If you take the best wave function on before our work is nil-ordered, so it's not surprising because everybody believes that the triangular lattice is ordered. But now we take this variational wave function that has a need, I mean, is a physical broken symmetry somehow, not in the physical space. And of course, since it is defined in a 2-by-1 unit cell, apart for fine-tuning, like here, if you put chemical potential equal 0, you get a gapless state, you get a gapped state, a gapped spin liquid. So in a 2-by-1 unit cell, you break the symmetry, you have always a gap. And you get lower energy than the other state. So if you stop at the variational level, you don't know what is going on in this triangular lattice. And in order to show that this is a spin liquid wave function, you just compute the structure factor divided by the volume, you do the finite size scaling, you see that it's clearly going down, probably exponential, well, should be exponential as a gap. So this is what happened. So we take our guess, which is a spin liquid. If you plot the spin-spin correlation function in one direction, you see the typical oscillation of the triangular three sublattice order. The first is very negative, the second is a little less, and then the third change sign, and the same structure. Each three times I recover the same positive correlation function if I move only in one direction. So the spin liquid wave function has the same kind of oscillation, but clearly spin liquid. If you apply this fixed node approximation, you see an instability. This is the correct signature of long range order. If we are able to do very large sites, you will see, well, I will show in the next transparency that you get off diagonal long range order, even if you start with a spin liquid wave function. This is the result. So if you take your 6x6, you would expect that this spin liquid because the correction goes down. Here is plotted the correction to the spin liquid result. So if this system, if this difference goes to infinity in the thermodynamic limit, this is a finite off diagonal long range order, so the system is magnetic. You see, you see a very nice straight line. Probably this is an accurate estimate of the other parameter. We should do also the 30 by 30. The problem is that when the system orders, so when you change qualitatively your wave function, you have critical slowing down. So you have gapless excitation somehow and the correlation time. So it's difficult to do the 30 by 30, but probably possible in the near future. Anyway, this is a rather good evidence that this is ordered, and it compares well with previous results. And the point is that previous result that we're starting with the variational wave function was ordered. So somehow, if you stay only at the variational level, you never can do any conclusion, because we have shown that a spin liquid wave function without order has lower energy. But if you try to do this approach, I think you can easily convince yourself that there is very little chance that the triangular lattice is not ordered, because if you start from an ill order, you do your very systematic correction, you go down 0.53 to 0.51, and F, if you start with the non-ordered, you get the same. So this is in agreement with this picture that if a model is stable and you solve exactly the ground state property, you do. Even if you don't study exactly the same model, you get more or less the same physical result. So this is also, it is interesting to compare with experiment in the organic. I've seen this is a little larger than 0.41, it's 0.45, and this is reasonable because this J is 1.8, so we go in the square lattice when this is 0.6. So this is also comparing well with experiments. So let's go to the interesting point. What happens when we decrease J prime? Now we have the possibility to see whether the system is ordered, and we have a spin-liquid wave function as a starting point. And let us remind you what happens if you do the classical calculation in this model. What happens is that you have the commensurate order. So this is the Brillouin zone. We have seen that there is a Bragg peak, if you want, at this wave vector. And if you decrease J prime, you have spiral phase, so which the wave vector moves in this direction. And this is a possible solution. Some series expansion has somehow said that this is the possibility of this. But now we can check the stability. So we can do exactly the same thing that we have done in the triangular lattice, and we got that this difference divided by the volume goes to infinity. And now we can reach theta by theta. This is easy. When we have more interesting model, there is a gap, there is no critical slowing down, we can go to larger sites, and we see that clearly this difference does not show up. So the wave function, even though if you do a better approximation, you try to increase this anti-ferromagnetic correlation, this eventually goes down to zero in an exponential fraction. It is interesting to show that this we get in commensuration at the variational level, so the peak in the magnetic structure factor is not at the commensurate point, but is slightly different. Actually, we overestimate, I mean, we overshoot the classical prediction, but it is a broad peak somehow. There is not a long range order. So we have found another realization of a spin liquid. Now a spin liquid with a gap that is due to the fictitious broken translation symmetry that you have in BCS Hamiltonian, which somehow when you project, this is still a spin liquid. Of course, I don't want to trust very much to the critical point, but somehow we can try to argue what is the phase boundary of this spin liquid region by looking to the energy, to the variational energy, and we see that the for minimal J prime, you see that this we have a spin liquid which is gapless according to the variational wave function, and the other one which is gapped start from the nil order, but somehow in this region remains stable, does not show up antiferromagnetism, and there is a phase boundary of this type. So in order to show that it's difficult to find the dimerization in two dimensions, we show just the dimer-dimer correlation function. We see that when we do the variational Monte Carlo and the diffusion Monte Carlo approach, we don't see much difference in the dimer-dimer correlation. These one are the ones that are predicted by the Lipschitz matrix, and they should break translation invariance. If the translation invariance is broken, our wave function somehow the translation invariance is broken only in a fictitious way. So that's, I think, I have finished my time, probably even more, and I want to finish that with this kind of approach, although it's based on an approximation, so we can discuss forever whether this is good or not. The only thing that I can say is that we can compare with experiment, and somehow in this organic material I have shown that there is evidence of a spin liquid phase. But according to our prediction, should be a completely different spin liquid phase of the one of the Coldea type, which is on this cesium, though it's the same model, but it's much different J prime over J. Huh? And also in this case, well, at least they claim that they found one-dimensional physics, so gapless nodal spin liquid. And it's also in agreement with the other state, but this is, of course, rather obvious. Thank you very much for your attention.
Sorry, so your red spin liquid is, it's fully gapped, is that?
Yeah.
And the blue one has nodes?
Yes.
Do you think?
Yes, I think.
But it does pre-projection in any case.
But yes, pre-projection, I mean, of course, in this, I assume that the projection cannot open a gap. I mean, this is assumed also, usually does not.
Sandro, in the regime, in the green regime, I saw you sunscreen and colorblind, so I cannot say.
Yeah.
There you have some spin density wave, essentially.
Yes.
So, is it possible, I guess you're more or less suggesting that maybe there was some incommensurate state.
Yes.
But then you're going to have huge finite size problems with your calculations, right? Because you have to be able to fit it, you know, the periods which can be very long.
Yeah, this is a problem. We have not tried because, I mean, maybe it's not. We could try. Of course, this is always very expensive. Not CPU time, but human work, so you need one postdoc for 1 year probably. And is it true when I've tried to find incommensurate, I was able once to find incommensurate finite size scale incommensurate thing. Somehow if you take the Fourier transform and you take the maximum, you may, you usually. What happens, for instance, in this case? Let's, you see this. If you take the maximum of the structure factor, usually, if you take a finite system, and you have incommensurate order, it will choose one wave vector, and so you have a reasonable, because just for the boundary condition. If it's frustrated, somehow it will put your signal in two wave vector, no? In that case you have to wash out your so we have checked that in all this calculation is always the maximum is well defined, it's not shared between few points. Another way, somehow, if you want to do a finite size scaling, is to average a little bit to some few wave vector that, in which, for instance, if you have a wave vector which is incommensurate, you have one very close, and in between two, you can sum the two and divide by two somehow. So somehow there are, I think, it is true, there is problem for incommensuration, but when you have a spin liquid, it's very easy because this is somehow a broad.
Yeah,
so this is, I don't have a two-dimensional picture, but it's rather broad, yeah. Yes, I've shown this probably. Yes, this is another way. I think I've shown somewhere. Yes, here, no? This is the triangular case. Sorry. I mean, but this is the shape. I mean, the wave function is a spin liquid, no? So if you plot in, if you do apply the fixed end node, this will show up order, but you see some structure like that. The problem is that, okay, we can do a very large size, but then you cannot do finite size scaling, no? So the question is how to do a reasonable, accurate finite size scaling. I mean, in the other region, this was the question, no? when it is ordered, how I can estimate what is the value of the order parameter. I will have bug peaks, but if my lattice does not have the right wave vector, I am killed. If I have a spin liquid, somehow everything is smooth. No problem.
In the dispersion you produced for the Kaldea parameters,
yeah.
I'm a little confused exactly. So ground states, I sort of understood. These are...
Yes, I can explain very briefly the technique, if you want. Well, let me remind the picture. Okay, this is... So somehow this is an interesting... because we have an Hamiltonian. That's the basic point. And we can... and we can, which is defined, the matrix elements are defined by a wave function, but it's always an Hamiltonian, and we can compute, so we take our ground state of the Hamiltonian, of this Hamiltonian, so I have this HF, which is blah, 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 four line of PRLs, whatever, but then I can apply e to the minus HF tau, and I apply SZ of Q. So this will create an excitation with finite momentum to the ground state with spin 1. And then I can, let me not confuse, compute this quantity. So you see, this is an excitation of this Hamiltonian, and this the denominator will go up the energy, the ground state energy. So at the end of the story, well, apart from a constant, this will go from, this will be the first excitation of this effective Hamiltonian with momentum Q and with C equal 1. So I study this in imaginary time, I do the log-log plot, and I evaluate this excitation. Is it clear?
No, I'm a little lost. H effective is the Hamiltonian for which the variational state is exact, or is
the... The fixed node. Is the one, the closest one, which I can do without changing the sign. Well, I don't change the sign in the ground state, but this does not mean that I don't change the sign in the excitation.
So it's the ground state for which the fixed node wave function is exact.
Exactly.
That Hamiltonian. And how different is it from... let's say just the JJ prime Heisenberg. What are the additional terms which don't fit in the PRL?
What is the difference? I mean, this is an important point. What we can do, I mean, the point is how this Hamiltonian is computed. You take in configuration space, you know that what I can do is to evaluate, I mean, what you drop essentially, the basic perturbation that you do to the real model, to the real triangular model, is when you meet a frustrated matrix element, okay? Suppose you want to do second spin flip with the second nearest neighbor and you find that this will eventually increase the energy, no? So you drop this term. What we can control is how likely are this term, okay? How likely I get this term, because I can generate by Monte Carlo all matrix elements with some probability, okay? And the point is that the wave function in the Kaldea case for J prime less, I mean for weakly, this neutron scattering experiment was for the Kaldea case, for in the limit J prime. So for J prime, if I do this approach for J prime equals zero, I get the exact excitation spectrum, okay? Because there is no sign problem. When I put J prime equal 0.8, if I remember correctly, you get, probably 4% of the matrix element that you have. So it's not a very big perturbation. We can evaluate how the ratio of matrix element that we kill off. But we don't kill off brutally. we do a classical approximation over that. So we put back in the potential. So this error should be even much less than 4%. So there is some way to systematically control what you are doing. I mean, for this particular case, in the weakly coupled limit, somehow, this method will be exact. So somehow.
You're saying you're pretty close to evaluating
the exact
energy of the wave function SZ acting on your ground state with the real Hamiltonian.
Yeah. Yes, we are pretty close, as far as you can say. Of course, I mean, we should, to do the exact, we should have gamma equal minus 1. We can do several gamma, nothing changes. So, but this is still an approximation.
You check for topological order in your fully gapped, for example, the fully gapped wave function.
Yeah, that would be interesting. We are not... we have not done. We have done in because this. I mean, the question is probably related to whether this gap is. You can have Bison or whatever. No. It is interesting, but we have not done, fortunately.
Thank you.